This is NPR Illinois. I'm Brian Mackey. Illinois continues to have the worst-funded government pension system of any of these United States. Legislators and other interested parties have taken several swipes at reducing those costs, but so far they've all been batted away by the Illinois Supreme Court. In a series of opinions, the justices have said the Illinois Constitution means what it says it does, that pension benefits shall not be diminished or impaired. But the Constitution also says something else, that membership in a pension system shall be an enforceable contractual relationship. And there are people who see that language as an opening. Among them is Eric Madere. He's an attorney, lobbyist, and consultant. He's also former chief legal counsel to Illinois Senate President John Cullerton and one of Illinois' foremost experts on state pension laws. He joins us now. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
So this idea of a consideration model has been out there for some time, and this is what you write about in this new law review article. Can you talk a little bit about what is the idea of consideration in the pension context?
So the concept that we have is we have pension benefit rights. When you join a pension system, you have a set of rights. But the thing about those rights is that the way the courts have described it, even though pension benefits are protected and they cannot be diminished or impaired, what's important is that the protection that is provided is that the benefits cannot be unilaterally diminished or impaired by the state or by a local employer. And what it does is it leaves open the ability to change or modify those benefits through what's called contract principles.
A couple of years ago, there was an attempt to really change and reduce the costs of pensions, significantly restricting the automatic annuity adjustments, the automatic raises that went in. And the court said that you're not really giving state employees anything of value in return for that.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a fair way of looking at it. The bottom line from the court's opinions, and this would be the Senate Bill 1 decision from May of last year, and then more recently, the March decision dealing with the Chicago pension reform legislation, is that both had the hallmark feature is that they were unilateral reductions of benefits.
So the past couple of Supreme Court decisions in the area of pensions have found that there has not been any sort of consideration, or at least not nearly enough consideration, under a framework that would be acceptable under the Illinois Constitution. Can you talk a little bit about what your article is proposing as a possible form of consideration that you contend would withstand legal scrutiny?
This article that I've recently written that Chicago Ken has published is really, where do we go next? Now that we have some indications from the court that clearly using unilateral attempts are off the table to reduce or mitigate the financial burden of paying for pensions, what can we do? And really, the concept here is that even though public employees have protected benefits, their salaries, however, are always subject to change, unless they're already locked into a collective bargaining agreement or some other employment agreement. But short of having that already promised pay increase, the employer still has the power to give raises or not give raises. And the one thing that was revealed by looking at New York court decisions, which have been followed in Illinois and have been cited favorably, is the fact that even though an employer does not have to give a raise, it can at the same time decide, I'd like to give a raise to employees, but not have the negative impact on the pension side of things. I will give a raise of, say, $1,000 under the condition that if you accept that money, it's not going to also count towards your pension. It'll be $1,000 in your pocket, pay rent, do whatever you would want to do with the raise, but it's not going to have the actuarial impact on the pension system.
You cited a few New York court decisions. Why would the Illinois courts care about what New York case law is?
Just in terms of usual rules of how you interpret statutes or you interpret constitutional provisions, if you've borrowed the language from another state, it's assumed that when they were taking on that language, they were taking with it the understanding that that other jurisdiction put to the language.
So because Illinois in our 1970 Constitution borrowed New York language for our pension protection clause, we also borrowed the New York case law that goes along with that language.
That's exactly right. In fact, one of the main decisions interpreting the Illinois pension clause is this appellate court decision from 1979 called Krauss. And Krauss, in fact, makes that very point, that we adopted what was the New York Pension Clause from 1938. With that, it's a sort of assumed that we've adopted the case law interpretations too.
So let me see if I understand this correctly. Under your framework, in Illinois, state employees, university employees, of which, for full disclosure purposes, I am one, even teachers, would have a choice. You would be able to say, if you want that 3% guaranteed raise to your pension every year after you retire, which is the current status quo, then basically any future salary increases you might get, you could be promoted to be the president of the University of Illinois, for example, and you can get, your salary could quadruple or go up 10 times, but you're still going to be locked in at whatever you are today. You're not going to get those salary increases counted towards your pensions. On the other hand, if you do want any future salary increases counted towards your pensions, you agree to a new sort of regime for how the cost of living will be factored after you retire. It'll no longer be that 3% guaranteed return. Is that a fair abridgment of the proposal?
I think I would be a little more, I would kind of describe it just a little bit differently. What I would say is people who are in the system who are tier one employees, they will get under current law and the current way things are a 3% compounded increase. They call it an annual annuity increase, or AAI, but everybody sort of refers to it as a COLA increase. So I'll call it a COLA increase. But the proposition is this, is that the employer, the state in this framework is making the offer to expressly promise that we would like you to take a lower COLA when you retire. But what we're offering is the fact that the state will not forever will not be in a position to offer you a future raise that is non-pensionable. Basically, the state is promising to never exercise the right it has today, which is to offer a raise on a non-pensionable basis.
It's Illinois Edition. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Eric Medair about his recent Law Review article laying out a legal framework for reducing pension costs that he says would pass muster with the government pension protections in the Illinois Constitution. I think there are going to be people who hear this, and maybe they've worked for the state a long time, and it's never occurred to them that their future salary increases would not be pensionable. Is that,
you know? I think that's probably what causes some confusion is that typically or historically what has happened is the employers have offered raises unconditionally. So the raise has counted really in two ways. It's counted as new money in their pocket for today, but it's also counted toward their pension to increase what is their pensionable salary when they retire. But what they leave out of the equation is that based on the New York decisions that have been favorably cited in Illinois, the employer has a right that it has not exercised, which is the right to say, I will give you a raise under the condition that it will not count toward your pension. It can exercise that right. So the status quo, which is the important thing here, the status quo is that the state or local governments have the power to offer raises on a conditional basis or not.
The state and local governments have the power to offer raises that are not pensionable,
that's
basically.
Right.
People are probably, I think you would acknowledge, going to be surprised by that, perhaps, or they just hadn't thought through it or it had never occurred to them that that's a possibility. How do you respond to the idea that this is coercive, right? Because a contract has to be fair and you have to have some level of conscionability, I think, is maybe one of the legal terms of art. You know, we've heard this example. People who have criticized this approach, I've seen the idea of you're standing on the edge of a cliff, somebody points a gun, says, jump or I'll shoot. Why would you say this is not that coercive?
I think part of it is people have to keep in context the type of relationship we're dealing with. We're not dealing with an idealized circumstance where two people sit across the table from one another and they hash out, I'm going to get this in exchange for that. When employees join the pension system and became members of the state or the municipal government that they're working for, there was already a set book of benefits and they had no choice in that matter. So those are the way the conditions are already set. The other thing to think about is that under contract principles, the employer still has a position that it has to be able to use its leverage, but in a non-coercive way, to get outcomes that it finds to be favorable. the case law in Illinois is very clear that the fact that you're presented with two negative choices does not make it coercive if this is something that's within the power of the party that's making the offer. How does that make sense here? The employer has the power to give raises or not give raises at all. With that power to give a raise or not is the power to offer a raise with that string attached, the condition that it would be non-pensionable. You may not like the fact that the employer has that power, and you may point to the fact that the state has not exercised that right in the past as somehow saying that the power doesn't exist. Well, that's just not true from a legal standpoint.
So the popular understanding of what is coercive in a fair contract and what may be even a just outcome is not necessarily what's going to be controlling in terms of the letter of the law that the Supreme Court might follow.
Yeah, coercion is in terms of a legal concept, because people can think it will have all kinds of pressures in life that where they will feel that they're coerced into making a choice one way or another. The fact that you're presented with what you would feel are unsavory choices doesn't make it coercive as a matter of law. And I would think with the fact that the pension rights are conceived as being contractual in nature, it has to have some meaning. They have to have some ability, that is the state, to utilize those principles to try and mitigate the financial impact of pensions, given the precarious circumstances that the state finds itself in.
I mean, you've read the Supreme Court decisions closely, and the court, or at least majorities on the court, have seemed to be pretty clear about saying the Constitution means what it says it does. You have to pay. It doesn't guarantee a funding source for those benefits. It just guarantees you have to pay those benefits. Why do you think this approach is the one that could sway the justices, that this is a way you can actually reduce the benefits?
Well, again, if the rights are understood to be contractual in nature, and you have these concepts that have been out there for a long period of time, offer acceptance, consideration, given the role of the state as the employer, the local government as the employer, they have to be usable and workable and practical in that they can be employed to help get some kind of changes. I don't read decisions, and I don't think that's the tenor of these decisions, that the state is just in no position to do anything through contract principles. You know, I think the recent decisions, that might be the point of, look, you need to live up your contractual obligations. But I see that more in the vein, you know, you just can't try and use unilateral approaches to this. You need to work within the guardrails of sorts of the Constitution and what the Constitution allows. And up to this point, that has not been utilized, as these decisions have made clear.
Well, Eric Medair, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Eric Medair is a lawyer, lobbyist, and consultant. He's also former chief legal counsel for the Illinois Senate president. I'm Brian Mackey.